From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 20th day of April, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. We'll check in on all the trade news that's been coming out of Washington and China, and then we'll hear about the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest and the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Texas and Oklahoma, parts of Kansas. A little rain there that'll sweep through the southern part of the growing area, the Delta, and maybe southern Illinois, deep southern Illinois, and then into the eastern Corn Belt. Some dry days for the middle part of the Corn Belt, and snow still on the ground in northern Iowa, Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, and some of the Dakotas, Nebraska area. So we'll take all of that in as we make our way through this Friday afternoon edition to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. We're now joined by Mike Zuzulo. He's a Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas. A few minutes ago, Mike, USDA NAS released the Cattle on Feed report. Why don't you bring me through those numbers to begin with, please?
Sure thing, Todd. April 1 on feed, 107.4%. That's 11.729 million head. A little lighter than the average trade guess. Placements in March, 90.7. A little bit bigger, just a hair from the average, 90.3. And then the marketings in March, 96.1. That's at the top end of the range. I'd say this is a neutral feeders to slightly friendly fat cattle report. All eyes, though, are going to be on NAFTA next week. We're getting some late breaking news here as we get into the Friday afternoon end of the day. And it sounds like they're going to be trying to make a push next week to announce a preliminary NAFTA draft and agreement as they iron out the all-important automotive section of that agreement. But with $120 to $122 cash trade established in the fat cattle market and the southern plains on decent volume this week, I think we've got a pretty solid market underneath us unless we get some bad news out of NAFTA.
And it looks like that may be good news, but we never know until things get pinned. And even then, I suppose it would be just a preliminary agreement. That was kind of the expectation that they haven't been able to quite get it all done. So they were going to release an early version of it, that some kind of draft agreement that they would figure might get them through, I suppose, the Mexican vote, and that's early this summer, I think in June at some point. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Elsewhere at the CME Group in Chicago, it was kind of an ugly day for the grains and the oil seeds. What happened there?
Well, what you just talked about, I think, has a lot of bearing on the grain trade this week, not just today, but this week as well, because if you go through the lead month or July contracts of just about everything, corn, beans, wheat, whether you're soft red or spring wheat or hard red, you're talking about 2.5% losses on the week, Todd. And that seems to me to be kind of the hallmark or the footprint of trade fears and investor fears and fund liquidation. And I think this goes right back to what you just talked about. There were high expectations, I think, higher expectations than what we saw about NAFTA this week. I wrote about that in last week's copy on the weekend to clients. Also, the news about the sorghum tariffs, I think, really ate into the confidence level of the potential longs out there in the grain markets. So that Sunday night's trade, we were already starting to unwind long positions. We received the crop conditions report on Monday. The headline was that winter wheat good to excellent conditions went up a point to 31%. The report itself, as you dug into it, showed that we're still running 3 to 4 times worse than last year at this time in hard red wheat in Texas, Kansas, and Oklahoma. But that headline was the only thing the trade really traded. And I think it goes back to the issues with the trade fears, the protectionism mindset, and obviously China and the sorghum issues, and the idea now that we've got some ships that are not heading to China anymore. They're kind of adrift on the water is kind of how the news wires were portraying it this morning as news broke that sorghum shipments to China don't have a home now.
Yeah, we'll hear about that in my newscast here in just a bit. There are 20 ships, and I think 5 of which have turned around and are headed somewhere else, but nobody quite knows where. They're owned by Cargill and ADM. What exactly the cargo is, and we're pretty sure it's sorghum, hasn't been determined as well. But boy, there's just a lot happening again in the marketplace. And until today, though, the futures were pretty quiet for the week. Did we do any technical damage at the end of this week today, do you think?
We went right to it when it comes to the wheat, because the July hard red wheat bounced off of $5, stayed above the $5 handle. Spring wheat in the lead month futures closed just below $6 on a settlement. We've not seen a weekly close below lead month spring wheat $6 since March 30th. As for the meal, we actually hung in there with support, staying above that 374 level. Meal once again kind of saved us when it comes to a week-to-week trade. And you notice one other thing, Todd, I think you tapped on it really astutely when it comes to the ships adrift. We're starting to see a separation between the cattle, hogs, and grains. And I think what we're starting to see is a cash market get firm and find support in the livestock market, whereas the grains, we're not getting that because of these NAFTA issues and these trade fears and these ships adrift issues. I think this is important from a standpoint of not just the wheat producer, but the corn producer. We may be setting up a market here where the cash basis does a lot of the heavy lifting this year. In other words, the funds could remain very lackluster and depressing when it comes to the futures market if we continue to play this role and play out this scenario with the trade protectionism, whereas the cash market finds a lot of support. And I'm keeping an eye on right now the central and southern Kansas wheat belt, what the basis levels are doing right now. And then we'll keep an eye on that every week as these rains are supposedly going to come through, because I would guess the basis will start to pop based upon the pictures I've been seeing from clients out in central and western Kansas.
Do we have experience in the past where the basis has really had to lead the market for very long? And cash price leads the market all the time, relatively speaking, but not always doing the heavy lifting. What do we know about this?
Yeah, I think the last time we saw was, and this was due to the USDA reporting, we saw that soybean crop get tighter and tighter and go below 100 million bushels. And a lot of us, and we're talking to you about it on the daily radio, saying it's not really what the USDA says. And all of a sudden we saw a $3, $4, $5 over basis. I think that was about 3 years ago, 4 years ago, we saw that. 2002, we saw it when the Northwest Ohio, Northeast Indiana drought hit real bad, a very serious regional drought that upset the ethanol and livestock industry in there. I remember in Lafayette, they were pulling corn out of away from Staley's over to Cooper Poultry over in Northwest Ohio. And so they were doing that with the basis play. So it is becoming more and more common. And I think this makes sense from a standpoint of how the futures trades and the mechanical algorithmic high frequency market that we're in the futures market. I think it's really important. I think the producers try and get in touch with somebody that watches this very, very closely, that can monitor these basis levels in areas that do have potential crop problems brewing.
Yeah, so you need to monitor in areas outside of your own area, right?
Exactly, yeah. And you know, even in the rivers, in the Illinois River up at Savannah, I believe it was, and even up towards Morris, we started to see a real basis move, appreciation in the corn, and $4 corn was not hard to get even this week for new crop corn out of Morris. And so we're already starting to see, and this goes back to the export side. We just got news from AgriRal here about 20 minutes ago that there may be damage in Brazil and Paraná and parts of Mato Grosso do Sul because of the dry cornfields. This is that safrinha crop we're all watching right now. There may be actual damage out there or starting to accrue. And so we don't have Ukraine as much of a presence going forward, South Africa, Argentina, Brazil. We really have a very strong lock on the export market when it comes to corn this next 6-7 months, I feel. And so it becomes extra pertinent that you watch these cash basis levels.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for everything.
Now, have a good weekend. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. In today's agricultural news, we'll lead with trade. Several ships carrying cargoes of sorghum from the United States to China have changed course. This since Beijing slapped a hefty anti-dumping deposit on U.S. imports of grain. 20 ships carrying over 1.2 million tons of U.S. sorghum are on the water, that according to export inspections data from USDA's Federal Grain Inspection Service. Of the Armada, valued at more than $216 million, at least five changed course within hours of China's announcing tariffs on U.S. sorghum imports on Tuesday. The five shipments all headed for China when they were loaded at Texas Gulf Coast export terminals are owned by grain merchants Cargill or Archer Daniels Midland. Beijing, which is probing U.S. imports for damage to its domestic industry, announced Tuesday that grain handlers would have to put up a deposit of 178.6% of the value of the shipment. Traders for Cargill and ADM likely sold most of the grain in the cargoes that are on the water. In a statement to Reuters Thursday, Cargill confirmed it's the exporter. The company declined to confirm what is in the ships, the final destinations, or the tonnage, nor the name of the customers. The company also declined to confirm why the ship stopped or if they are being redirected. ADM representatives declined to comment. Now we'll stay with trade in China. U.S. soybean exports to China could fall by as much as 65% if the tit-for-tat trade battle between the two world's largest economies prompts Beijing to slap retaliatory tariffs on. This according to a soon-to-be-published report from Purdue University. The study comes after China announced earlier this month the U.S. soybeans could be hit with a 25% tariff if President Donald Trump pulls the trigger on planned tariffs to punish Beijing for its forced technology transfers. If a U.S.-China trade war comes to fruition, China is expected to rely even more on Brazil for soybeans. Brazil is the largest soybean exporter to China, a title it snatched from American farmers 7 years ago. U.S. soybean farmers could find some substitutes for its losses in business by expanding in other markets that now take in Brazilian beans. Brazil will take a big chunk of our market with China, and we'll take a chunk of Brazil's market elsewhere, says Wally Tyner, a professor of agricultural economics at Purdue. However, even by cutting into Brazil's other markets, there is no combination of alternative routes available that could sufficiently make up for a major loss of business with China, a market that accounts for roughly 61% of U.S. exports and is worth nearly $14 billion. Well, on that note, election year politics has made it nearly impossible for the two parties in the House to agree on much, including a farm bill, but they may agree on one thing: tariff retaliation relief for producers. The House 18 farm bill that passed out of committee with only GOP votes has no money to relieve producers impacted by tariff retaliation by China or any others, and both parties agree relief is needed to cope with the Chinese tariffs on U.S. pork, fruit, nuts, sorghum, ethanol, and maybe soybeans later. But the issue is whether to include new funding the administration's trying to come up with in the farm bill. Top House Ag Democrat Colin Peterson.
We have sent a letter, and I'm just advising you, to the White House, signed by all the members on this side of the aisle, asking them that if they're going to have additional money that they're going to try to make available to farmers because of the damage that potentially could be done by the trade deals, that we not do that on an ad hoc basis.
Peterson from Minnesota argues a more permanent solution is needed.
But if there is extra money, what I would like to suggest and what we have in this letter is that the money be put into the farm bill on a permanent basis, into the Title I of the farm bill, so we can improve the safety net in case we get into a continuing low-price situation.
Peterson says Senate GOP Ag Chair Pat Roberts agrees. The National Corn Growers Association has also called for a farm bill solution, but most farm groups backed the farm bill's advancing Wednesday, while Democrats solidly opposed it. House Ag Chairman Mike Conaway is sympathetic to the tariff relief, but not yet on a farm bill approach.
I think all of us share the same concerns about the immediate direct impact that these current trade negotiations and the tariff conversations having on real people, prices dropping and the tariffs, everything else. And so be happy to take a look at the letter.
Conaway told reporters recently that the Ag Secretary already has emergency spending authority through a disaster aid bill. He also has Commodity Credit Corporation borrowing authority to buy some commodities. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. This is the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is now here. He's with Agribull. Eric, thanks for being with us. There's a lot happening, I think, in the weather. Let's start in the Southwest with the hard red winter wheat. Have they gotten rainfall?
Yeah, you know, the first round of it's coming through right about now. So it's coming out of eastern Colorado, and it's going to be moving to Kansas and Oklahoma and Texas soon. But the big thing to see here is that over the last 7 days, we've watched a pretty clear model trend where we've seen lower and lower precipitation amounts for the far western part of that hard red winter wheat growing area. So now, you know, as these rounds of rain come through, maybe we're talking about a half to three quarters of an inch over the western parts of the hard red winter wheat growing area. But certainly central Oklahoma is going to get plenty of rain as the system kind of taps into some juicier air as it moves to the east. So that's kind of an important thing to see just because, you know, this is a rain that's finally coming through to a place that's been exceptionally dry. They're certainly in the, you know, deep into the stages of drought, but this is not a drought buster. This isn't going to end it, but any little bit of rain they can get, you know, they desperately need. So that's certainly it. And here's the good news for us. As this system comes through, it may only hit, you know, Missouri, very far southern Illinois, southern Indiana, Ohio, Kentucky, Tennessee. I think we're going to spend the weekend dry here in central and northern Illinois because of this. And I also got some other good news. I think that last night was maybe our last night of seeing some below freezing temperatures. We're going to get cool tonight, you know, mid-30s. But I look out the next 7 to 8 days just to kind of get an idea on overnight temperatures, and I don't see a single one below freezing. So with 60-degree temperatures, above 60-degree temperatures as our highs, no rain, and, you know, a lack of sub-freezing temperatures overnight, I think we're going to see a lot of field work getting done over the next 5 days.
Will that go in parts of Iowa, Minnesota, I don't know, the Dakotas, where they've gotten the snowfall? How fast can that come off?
Yeah, you know what? I feel for these guys. Thankfully, that snow can melt pretty fast under an April sun. And if they get a little bit of southerly wind on that, that'll really get going quickly. But they still have quite a bit of it to deal with. I just took a look here, and right now, parts of southern Minnesota, northern Iowa, and southern Wisconsin, and far eastern Nebraska still have anywhere between 2 and 5 inches of liquid equivalent in the snow. That only the really heavy spots have that 5-inch liquid equivalent, which means when it melts, it's all got to, you know, soak into the soil and run off. So they're not going to be planting while we are. And honestly, it's interesting because there's still snowpack there. When we get a little bit of a west or northwest wind, that wind blows over the top of that snow and cools it down. We call that a sensible heat flux. And that actually is going to keep our temperatures from trying to rebound, you know, much above what they are. But I'll tell you this, for those guys, the good news is that the systems are, you know, the jet stream is not blocked up right now. And that means that they'll have what I would just call regular weather, which means every week or so we'll have a low pressure system that comes through and we'll go back to seeing seasonal temperatures. In fact, there's nothing right now that makes me think that we're going to go, you know, really one way or the other on highs or lows for quite some time.
What's the long-term guidance tell us?
You know, so we got a new update just recently from the long-range European model, and it's kind of spelling a pretty similar story. We're not going to see a flip to summer-like weather anytime soon, but we're going to have more of what would be a typical spring in terms of our temperatures, which is why I think when I think about the weather and people getting into the fields, there's no big red flag saying, wait, there's going to be something else nasty coming. You know, I just ran out the long-range GFS model, and I didn't see snow in it at all for the Corn Belt. Well, that's a fantastic sign. And again, coming back to that long-range European model, like I said, we're going to be seeing more average weather with a real lack of any heat or cold on either side. But I will tell you this, one group that's getting left out of all of this, you know, warm up and a little bit wetter conditions is Canada. So Saskatchewan, Manitoba, you know, parts of Western Ontario, this area has been quite dry now for a while, and they are not forecast to get much rain at all over the next 10 days. So that's a region we have to watch because they've been increasing production quite a bit over the last decade. So they're now a bigger player in global, you know, corn and soybean farming.
Hey, thanks so much.
Yep, thank you.
Well, that, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agribull.